Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pandora's Box. This is Kalia, and today is Tuesday, March the 10th, 2015. The topic of our show today is parasites and their host. Over the past 6 or 7 months, I've been working with a man from India who has a gift of working with energy and gives a type of energy transmission. And this man's gift has the ability to heal diseased plants, and he's been the subject of many university studies that have scientifically documented his before and after results. A friend of mine turned me on to him, and there was something within me that said, give this a try, and I did. And 6 months later, my life has been completely reconstructed. The journey in the very beginning was very painful because although it seemed I had been rebuilding my life in a good way, I still had not surrounded myself with all the right kinds of people. My patterns were such that I was still hanging around people who didn't have my best interest at heart. After my first energy transmission, the people I had centered my life around were abruptly removed. A few of the people, that is. And although the intellectual part of me could look at this experience from a higher perspective and say, wow, look at what happened, the emotional part of me felt re-traumatized by the experience, mostly because of the betrayals and pain I went through as a result of my life blowing up yet again. There was still another layer of healing opening up to me, and I accepted that what was happening was for my highest good, even if it didn't feel good at the time. What was happening was the parasitic energies in my life were being removed, and I became hypersensitive to parasitic energy, so I couldn't allow it in my life anymore. The man I was working with, Master Trivedi, talked a lot about ridding ourselves of the parasites in our life. And I had a real aversion to seeing people as parasites, but looking at this deeper, that's exactly how this energy works. It seems that looking at people in terms of more psychological terminology, such as narcissist or sociopath, seem a little bit kinder. Yet on so many levels, I was being asked to step more fully into my power and recognize where I was giving power and energy away and how my healer archetype still tended to attract those needing healing. Some of those needing healing were not good for me to be around. Over the past 3 months, I worked with another mentor who helped me to understand and work with my healer archetype and embrace myself more as a healer. And part of embracing myself as a healer meant to understand my own energies and how they interact with others. The path back to self involves a very deep understanding of oneself and his or her own energies. In psychology, we have a lot of different labels for people who take energy, such as narcissists, borderline, sociopaths, and addicts. We also have labels for those who give energy at their own expense, such as codependents and enablers. But let's simplify our understanding of the dance between the giver and taker by looking at the relationship of the parasite and the host. The definition of a parasite is an organism that lives in or on another organism, its host, and benefits by deriving nutrients at the host's expense. Let's change that definition to reflect the relationship between human parasite and their host. A person that lives in or on another person, its host, and benefits by deriving energy at the host's expense. In this parasitic relationship, the parasite feeds on the energy of the host and becomes stronger while the host becomes weaker. A parasite is not born but bred, and anyone has the capacity to be parasitic to another person in times of extreme emotional stress, physical illness, emotional depletion, or mental illness. People who have been parasited quite a bit in their lives can also become parasitic. Many personality disorders or disordered people are parasitic because they're cut off from their emotional sustenance, from their feelings, and from source. Although our society at large is pretty far removed from their authentic self, or true self as we call it, the more one is cut off, the more he or she is likely to become either a parasite or a host. It is from the extreme imbalance within the self that we partner with people who are polarized in the opposite direction. It is said opposites attract, and the host-parasite relationship is a perfect example. Those who play the role of host to a parasite agree to that arrangement on a subconscious level. The more we know ourselves and understand ourselves, the more we can understand why we feed our life force energy to a taker. We often see the relationship between host and parasite as victim-perpetrator. The host is the victim, and the parasite is the perpetrator. The parasite is only concerned with its own needs for food, otherwise energy. It cannot be concerned with who he or she is feeding on, but rather pursues a source of food for its own survival. But a parasite doesn't always appear to be needy or some kind of desperate energy vampire. Parasitic energies can appear to be confident, successful, and even loving. We can't always trust what we see, but we can trust what we feel. In order to trust what we feel, we have to know what we feel. We also need to know what we can change and what we can't. We can change our own behavior and perspective, but we can't change another person. If someone in your life is behaving in a manner that feels disrespectful, dishonoring, or dishonest, you can't make that person respect you or honor you or be honest with you. The person is coming from his or her own woundedness and can't see beyond it. And it's not your role to help that person see beyond it. Unless you're a coach or counselor or healer in some way, and that person is hiring you to help. In that case, the relationship is set up differently, and the person consulting you actually wants your help. When we begin to recognize that we can't help or heal another person, we can make the decision on whether or not we feel the relationship is healthy or serving us in any way that is beneficial to our own growth and well-being. A codependent relationship is one where you feel you need to fix or change the other person to be what you need him or her to be. And that may also include trying to get that person to be clean and sober, trying to get that person to be healthy, to present as sane, or to be honest. An enabling relationship is when you allow that person to continue his or her toxic or disrespectful behavior with you by your own refusal to relate differently to that person or leave the relationship when it becomes confusing, disempowering, emotionally invalidating, and/or abusive. When we continue to give our energy to a relationship that is disempowering, we can continue to feed the parasitic energy, and it grows stronger as we grow weaker. And this is a very important aspect of the parasite-host relationship. You may feel strong in the beginning when you meet the person, but that person's actions and behavior are such that you make allowances and modifications in order to stay in that relationship. And as a result, you find yourself giving your power away and growing weaker energetically. People come out of parasitic relationships completely drained of energy. And in my counseling practice, I hear the same thing over and over. I gave everything I had to give, and when I was completely drained, he or she left. If a relationship is set up to where you're giving your energy and the other person is taking it, it's important to understand that the taker is reliant upon your energy for his or her survival. And if you run out, it's like a well running dry. That person will detach from you and go find another source of water. This energy can be in the form of emotional energy, physical energy, or money. When you have been under the illusion that the relationship was based on mutual love, care, and consideration, detachment can come as quite a shock. You may have continued feeding your energy to the relationship because you believe this was true love, and you were giving your energy because you really loved that person. Your expectation is that the person you were giving your energy to also loved you in the same way. And when there's an immediate abandonment of a relationship without warning, or the normal slow disintegration that can happen when two people are growing apart, most people are forced to see the truth of that relationship, and that truth is not pretty. It's said that the reason most people stay in abusive relationships and cults is because they don't want to face the truth. Facing the truth might mean having to accept something you're not yet ready to accept. You might have to accept that a guru, a spiritual leader, a family member, a therapist, a friend, or a relationship partner didn't really have your best interest at heart. What kept you holding on is the belief that this person truly cared about you, and accepting that there was another agenda going on that had nothing to do with love or care for you can be very painful. Since it is our nature to avoid pain, we also avoid the truth that will bring us pain. If you grow up feeling unloved or uncared for, you have the feeling in your deep unconscious and will often attract people into your life who mirror to you or show you how you are feeling deep inside. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I feel unloved, and therefore I attract people who exploit my weakness and prove to me that I'm not lovable. Parasites do exploit the weakness of the host. They're very good at tapping into your fears and insecurities and using them to control and manipulate you. And most people find their fears and insecurities growing stronger in these kinds of relationships because they're always being activated, brought to your attention, and used against you. If you grew up in a dysfunctional family where you are consistently denying your fears and insecurities, pushing them down, and pretending they don't exist, you'll be cut off from the awareness of them until some life circumstance brings them back up to the surface. And when our fears and insecurities surface in a big way, it can be overwhelming to our nervous system and can feel as if we're being severely punished. Our shame, our guilt, and our sense of inadequacy become fully activated as we believe we are in such pain because we're somehow bad, wrong, or not worthy of being loved, cared for, or valued. These deep, shameful feelings are usually the result of early childhood when we felt we were wrong, bad, or unloved in some way. Children naturally blame themselves when they're not getting a need met from a parent or parents. It's common a young child will believe, I'm not getting the love I want and need because I'm not worthy, or I'm bad, or I don't deserve love. And these beliefs become our core beliefs that we go through life with, often completely unaware of how our lives are being affected. When we enter into parasitic relationships, we often find that we doubt ourselves because of the invalidation we're experiencing in that relationship. For example, if you're in a relationship with a significant other who has a habit of showing up late, and you express your anger and disappointment that this person is always late, you might hear that you are selfish, and that you don't understand that he or she is very busy and has a lot going on. That person might go on to tell you they don't. If they can continue to be in a relationship, they don't think they can continue to be in a relationship with someone who is so needy and demanding or something to that sort. Suddenly you find yourself wondering, am I selfish? Do I lack understanding? Am I needy? Am I demanding? You also get the message, how dare you confront this person or call him or her on his or her behavior? Parasitic people are often masters at projection. In the same scenario, the deeper truth is that the person who is always showing up 2 hours late for an agreed-upon meeting is inconsiderate, disrespectful, selfish, and lacks understanding. But because there's an inability to see oneself objectively, the blame lies with the person calling him or her on his or her behavior because that person really doesn't want to look at it. Once again, it's the truth factor. The truth could be too painful. So there's all these coping and defense mechanisms to push the truth away, and one of them is projection. Accusing the other person of doing exactly what you're doing. When you're in a situation where you're always accepting blame, you are likely in a parasitic relationship. In a healthy relationship, both parties are willing to look at themselves objectively and discuss how they're showing up with each other. They're willing to see their own weaknesses and imperfections and make a commitment to use this awareness for their growth and expansion. True commitment is not about committing to be together. It is about committing to grow together. Without mutual responsibility, there can be no growth. Without growth, there can be no real relationship. At any given moment, a relationship between two people is either growing or dying. And in order for that relationship to grow, both parties need to be committed to that growth. In our quest for healthy cooperative relationships, we need to learn the difference between actions and words. Words are cheap. Anyone can say, I love you, but you may not feel the love. Someone can say, I'm committed to you, but you don't feel their sense of commitment. Someone can say, you mean the world to me, but you're not feeling considered or respected. Do you trust the words or the feelings? As I said before, we need to learn to trust ourselves and our feelings. The more we can learn to trust ourselves and value ourselves, the less we will sacrifice ourselves for the parasitic needs of others. If you find that you tend to attract parasites in your life, you must learn to understand what your role of host is bringing to your life. How is that role serving you? Often we need to be needed and the parasite needs us during the time he or she is feeding off us. We can initially get a sense of feeling valued and important when we feel needed. We may also have a belief that if that person needs us, he or she will never leave us. But in parasitic relationships, we will either leave it before we are completely tapped or we'll be fully drained and the parasite in our lives will abandon ship in favor of a new food source. Parasitic people have no problem taking advantage of others, using and exploiting others, and draining the resources of others. I've had many people come to me who were not only energetically depleted, but all their financial resources had been drained. And this is also very common in parasitic relationships. Those of us on the outside can often look at someone who has drained their bank account to help a parasitic person as being stupid or naive. But it isn't fair we judge someone without a full understanding of what goes on in these relationships. What often happens is there might be a core belief, I'm selfish and greedy, that stemmed from early childhood. And then in adulthood, someone comes along who seems confident and capable of success, but perhaps having a rough streak in his or her life, which has often contributed to some previous partner who took advantage of them. Parasites often see themselves as the victim because of a need for the host to see herself or himself as a hero, as a good person, a loving person, a caring person, and unlike the ex-partner, he or she steps in and supports that person to get back on his or her feet. And the support soon becomes expected. And if there is any threat of withdrawing support, the host is accused of being selfish and greedy, which activates the core belief and causes the host to try to prove the parasite wrong by being even more generous. The host is generous to a fault, but believes the parasite will soon strike gold in his new business venture or soon find that great new job, or at the very least be greatly appreciative of all the help that was given. The host believes in the philosophy, I give to you now and you'll give back to me later. But what happens is when it's time for the parasite to give back, he will often bail and leave that person empty. The parasitic person can be very charming and charismatic and also convincing. Most people I've worked with who were financially depleted by a parasitic energy truly believe that they were with a good-hearted person who would never hurt them. In the end, they're shocked. This is unexpected. There's a type of brainwashing that goes on similar to the brainwashing that happens in a cult, where cult members are convinced to give up their identities and resources to be absorbed into the cult identity. There's a belief in place that if they give up all their resources, their friends, their family, and identity, they would be greatly rewarded in some way, be it spiritual enlightenment, love, acceptance, and approval. Fear of rejection, abandonment, being found guilty or shamed is used to keep cult members in line. There's a belief, if I do what is expected of me, I will receive love and approval, but if I don't comply with the expectations of the group, the leader, or the significant other, I'll be abandoned, shamed, rejected, disapproved of, and found guilty. When we put ourselves in the hands of others, and give others the power to validate or invalidate us, we're setting ourselves up for a fall. We're giving our power away. We're giving our power to an individual or a group to determine our worth and value based on our compliance to the ideal of the other. If we rebel against the ideal, we're found unworthy and often punished. We can so easily become like little children, desperately wanting and needing the approval of the primary caregiver. Our survival as a child depends on it. And we can approach these relationships with the same desperation, with some subconscious belief that our survival depends on that validation. Our healing process involves healing these core beliefs, healing our core shame, and all those feelings of inadequacy that cause us to believe we're not deserving of true love or care. Our healing process involves learning to find ourselves worthy, to validate ourselves, to accept and approve of ourselves, which ultimately leads to self-love. We so often hear, you cannot love anyone else if you don't love yourself. This is not only true for the parasite, but also for the host. Both are operating from imbalance and lack of self-love. Both are dependent upon another for their sense of self. Both are polarized in the opposite direction and are attracted to each other out of an unconscious need. If we become conscious of our needs, we'll no longer be dominated and manipulated by those needs. If your need is to feel loved, to feel valued, to feel cared for, to feel validated and approved of, but you're not aware of how deeply unloved and unvalued you have felt all of your life, you become like a heat-seeking missile to people who will cause you to feel the opposite of what you really long to feel. This is because our need to feel loved, valued, cared for, and validated come from what lies in our shadow, a feeling of being unloved, invalidated, and uncared for. And the law of attraction brings to us awareness of what is in our shadow, the part of us we're unaware of or cut off from. In the spiritual journey, we become aware that we attract more from what we're unconscious of than what we're conscious of. We may desire love, but unconsciously believe we're not worthy of love. We're more likely to attract someone who mirrors to us our feelings of being unworthy rather than someone who mirrors our desire to be loved. And this is because what lies in the subconscious is more powerful. You may think, I'm really a loving person and I really care about people, so why do I keep attracting people who treat me so badly? As you explore this question, you may find that you're lying to yourself in some way. You've failed to love and care about the most important person in your life, you. If you have a belief that you're a loving person and really care about people, but you failed to love yourself or care about yourself, then you're living a lie. You've been lying to yourself. You're living from a false belief, and you continue to attract people who are showing you your false belief. You may find yourself working harder and harder to prove yourself or to yourself that you really are loving and caring by giving more and more and more to others, meanwhile giving less and less and less to yourself. You may even see yourself as selfless, as generous and giving. But you've ignored your own needs, wants, and desires in order to cater to the needs of others out of some unconscious attempt to see yourself as good, whether it be a good little boy or girl, a good husband or wife, a good employee, a good parent, or a good friend. The more you ignore and abandon yourself, the more the part of you that you are ignoring and abandoning, we often refer to this part as the inner child, So more of that part of you that's being ignored and abandoned works to deconstruct the life you've created that excludes the most real and honest part of yourself, the most authentic part of yourself. You may find your life falling apart because it needs to fall apart. The illusions of who you are need to be destroyed so that you can face the truth. The deeper truth may reveal that you have allowed, on some level, yourself to be treated poorly, to be disrespected, devalued, abused, and used. And this is never a good feeling. In my counseling work, one of the first things I do with people is get them to see how they feel about what has taken place. I feel devalued. I feel invalidated. I feel used. I feel disrespected. I feel abused. And identifying how you feel is the first step. The second step is to look at how we devalue, invalidate, abuse, and disrespect ourselves in our attempt to receive validation and approval from the outside world. The healing journey involves learning how to validate, approve of, accept, respect, love, and care for oneself. And this is powerful. It's a journey. It's the path back to self. But what better path can one choose to embark on? The path back to self is the path to joy, to love and abundance in one's life. It is the most worthwhile path that we can walk. Initially, you may find yourself walking alone, and you may be tempted to pull in all kinds of wounded and needy characters because you identify with them in some way. You understand what it is to feel wounded, to feel rejected, abandoned, and out of your own sense of empathy, you set out to help that person feel better about himself or herself. And this, in part, is a projection because the deeper desire is to feel better about yourself. I really got caught up in this dynamic on my path back to self. I was the compassionate listener. I empathized with the pain of others. And as a counselor, this is a great quality. And even as a friend and a lover, this is a great quality. But I had to learn how this quality can be easily exploited by those who lack empathy. I had to learn to recognize when the relationship was not really serving me or valuing me. And I had to value myself enough to walk away from people who did not treat me well, who did not respect, consider me, or have empathy for my experience. And if I didn't walk away, they were going to get kicked out of my life anyway. The parasites in our lives will often show up when they need something and leave when they get what they want. So we need to develop enough self-awareness to realize this dynamic. Parasites will also leave when they don't get what they want. So if we stop feeding the parasite, it will go away. We have to understand how we do feed the parasite. We may give a lot of attention, approval, validation, time, energy, money, and unconditional love without expectation of anything in return. There's a belief that unconditional love is to give without expectation of anything in return, and that is partly true. What most people don't realize is there is an expectation. They're simply unaware of it. And it's perfectly okay to have expectations in a relationship. We're right to expect to be respected, to be treated fairly, to be listened to, and to be cared about. These are healthy and reasonable expectations. So if you're giving your time, attention, and energy to someone who does not value you or meet your needs for being respected, considered, cared about, and treated fairly, the relationship is going to be parasitic. We have to get used to checking in with ourselves and asking ourselves important questions about how we feel in all of our relationship. If a relationship doesn't feel good, we need to be willing to ask ourselves why. It's important that we learn what our basic needs are and what we want, need, and desire from our relationships, and then enforce it. It's important to be able to say, I deserve to be treated with respect and consideration. And if I'm not treated with respect and consideration, I no longer need to give my time, attention, or energy to that relationship. It's okay for me to leave that relationship, whatever relationship it may be, and surround myself with people who do treat me well. If you are parasitically attached to someone, then you either need something from that person, or that he or she is not giving, or you're still feeding your energy to that person through some unconscious agreement, or both. People who have been a host to a parasitic person will come out of the relationship feeling very drained. There's a real loss of energy, and sometimes money and dignity. Most people get into blaming that person for taking their energy. But in order to be fully empowered and get your energy back, you must take responsibility for giving your energy to that person. You may have good reasons for giving your energy, and you may not have been aware of what you were doing. But taking responsibility for our part is the first part to recovery. When we wake up from our slumber in the world of illusions, we may find that we're very angry at the parasitic influence in our lives for sucking our energy dry. We may remain attached through our anger and desire for revenge or to get our power back. And although our anger can show us where we are allowing our boundaries to be violated, and our anger needs to be honored, it's also important to put things into perspective so you can heal and move forward in your life. If you're waiting for that person to take responsibility, acknowledge what he or she did to you, recognize how he or she used, exploited, or took advantage of your kindness, or offer a sincere apology, you could be spending your whole life waiting. The faster way to healing is to practice acceptance of what is and recognize that the only way to get your power back is to take full responsibility for your experience from this point on. This means recognize that the parasitic influence is not likely to change or admit responsibility. And the best thing you can do is let go of needing it. Let go of needing that person to act or behave in a certain way. Find out what you really need from that person and give it to yourself. If you're looking for an apology, try apologizing to yourself. Say something like this: I'm really sorry that I allowed this to happen to you. You never deserved this. You were not comfortable with so much of what was going on, and yet I ignored your discomfort, and I tried to pretend everything was okay when it wasn't. I deeply apologize for betraying you, for lying to you, and ignoring you. I promise never to do this to you again. Please forgive me. I love you. You also have to refuse to continue to be a victim or play the role of a victim. the more you focus on what he or she did to you, the more you continue to give that person your power. If you're focusing on how that person lied to you, cheated you, took advantage of you, and betrayed you, the focus is on what was done to you. And although it's important to acknowledge any kind of abuse so you can stop it from happening in the future, it's also important to bring your attention back to the many ways you may have allowed the abuse to continue or the many ways you betrayed yourself by ignoring the truth. And I'm not talking about blaming yourself at all. I'm talking about taking responsibility for what is yours to take responsibility for. You have no control over what the other person does or doesn't do. But you do have control over how you act and react to it. For example, I'll often work with someone whose partner has had multiple affairs. This is a typical scenario. The cheating partner doesn't ever acknowledge the pain his affairs caused his partner, but expects the partner to forgive him. For simplicity, I'm saying him and her here. So the cheating partner expects the partner to forgive him, to put it in the past and never mention it again. And if the partner that has been cheated on doesn't forgive him, he says things like, you just can't let go, can you? Or you're living in the past, or your behavior is the reason I had the affairs in the first place. If you weren't so needy and demanding, I'd never have had the affair. So in this situation, the woman begins to feel the affair was all her fault, and so she dismisses it. And that's exactly what the man who had the affair wanted. So I asked the client why she stayed after the first affair. And she might say she believed he would never do it again. He promised. But she also acknowledges that he never really took responsibility and she never fully held him accountable. So in a sense, she was willing to sweep the whole ordeal under the rug in order to avoid facing the sad state of her relationship, in order to avoid facing the truth. She may go through this ordeal many times in the relationship and talk to me about how her ex was a lying, cheating narcissist. And although this may be true, the real focus needs to be on, why did I ignore my feelings? Why did I sweep it under the rug? Why did I believe he wouldn't do it again? Why did I stay long after I stopped trusting him? So see, this is the part that we have to be responsible for. Understanding our own reasons and learning to take responsible for our whys, is what will eventually set us free. Because we have the opportunity to see how we are part of the problem. We're not just a victim. We might have been allowing and enabling because it would have been too painful to face the truth. We need to own our part, not as a way of blaming ourselves or beating ourselves up, but a way of loving ourselves and setting ourselves free. When we can acknowledge that there's a part of us that ignored the red flags and swept the issues under the rug, we can become self-aware and learn to look at the part in the future as it begins to do the same thing. So we're not repeating the same pattern over and over and over. You have to become aware of your pattern to avoid repeating it. It doesn't do us any good to blame the other for being seductive and hooking you back in over and over and over again. It's much more empowering to look at, why am I allowing that person to seduce me? What am I finding so seductive? What need is being met? What unmet need am I trying to get met? So here we are with the whys again, asking ourselves questions, so that we can understand our own motivation. We can't blame the other for our own inability to say no or erect boundaries where they are needed. We have to be able to look at our own weaknesses and what is hooking us back in and understand those. And practice a little willpower. And if we don't have willpower, get some help. Many people will say, oh, but I really loved him, or I really loved her. Loving another person is not an excuse to tolerate abuse. Because if you tolerate abuse, you're not loving yourself. And if you don't love yourself, you can't really love that person. You may be trying to get a need met through that person, however. You may long for that person to love you, to validate you, to see you as good, and to take responsibility for the damage done. And this longing for an unmet need to be met can be interpreted as love, but it's not. It's a toxic agreement. It's important to be able to recognize that the disempowering toxic relationships you find yourself in are not about love, but about the unconscious agreements that leave you feeling drained, disempowered, and bonded through pain rather than love. When you recognize the truth, I can never get my needs met through this person, you will have more of an ability to say no to that person in your life and move on beyond him or beyond her. When you really start taking care of yourself, loving yourself, respecting yourself, listening to yourself, and honoring your own wants, needs, and desires, you'll begin to attract more people into your life who reflect to you your own self-love. And this is exactly what has happened for me. If you need help identifying what is keeping you hooked into a parasitic relationship, or you're unable to let go of a relationship that has already ended, or even if you find that you are parasitic yourself and want to change that dynamic, you can contact me through my websites, narcissismfree.com or pathbacktoself.com. Sometimes help is needed, and investing in yourself is important to your healing and your growth. So please don't hesitate to reach out when you need to. Now, if anybody has any questions, you can call in to 347-826-9626 and press number 1 on your keypad to speak with me. That's 347-826-9626 and press number 1 on your keypad to speak with me. And I'm going to play song Ancient. I have a question. I'm going to go ahead and stop that. And 845, area code 845, you're on the air.
Hi, Kalia. It's Georgie.
Hi, Georgie. How are you?
It's been a while. Your schedule and mine weren't always dovetailing, but I've tried to keep track of when you're going to be doing a program. I do enjoy them.
Awesome. Good to hear your voice, Georgie.
Oh, thank you. This topic really got a hold of me today as I'm getting older, and I'm seeing something that was surprising me in the last year or so, that all of a sudden friendships, relationships that are friendships, people who've known each other well, you know, discuss whatever's going on in their lives, and you don't think too much about it, but years and years and years go by. All of a sudden, with some of them, I was coming to a point of there's no purpose in going around this person's mulberry bush with them anymore. I've said always the same things, and apparently they're not listening. Where I thought they valued my point of view or something that I'm doing that works for me, so and I was quite willing to share or be encouraging or whatever, I suddenly felt like I was being used, and this person was spinning their own little top. They needed a little kick-off from me, and then they would simply go do the same thing, have all the same meltdowns and reactions, and it was as if they're not even listening. And I don't know why, I just became fed up in a very unemotional way. It's just like, I can't keep using my energy for this.
Because you decide, you decide how to use energy.
It's not going anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, I can't waste my time listening. And it was it happened in several different situations. And I was really it wasn't my personality, because usually I'm kind of, hi, how are you? But it was something else, and I just kind of knew I couldn't. I saw on some a facade that would butter me up and pretend to want to know what I thought. But in reality, they just wanted to run. I guess they liked hearing themselves talk. I don't know. But what I had to give wasn't being actually computed. They were doing their own thing while I sat there and listened to them do it. And I realized...
Well, it seems, Georgie, that the older we get, the less we put up with things. So that could be part of the gift of growing older, is you just get what... You really do sometimes. I'm not saying that's the case with everybody. But when you're on a growth path, definitely, you become wiser. You recognize that stuff more frequently.
I was quite surprised. And then I'm now, so the adjustment in seeing some other friends, because I'm in a big church-type group, and so I have a lot of different people that will become friends for a while or new friends. But now I realize everybody's on their own path. And I can really only say this is what is working for me. This is what is left of all the things I tried, a lot of which didn't work. But what I have and what I do now, this works for me. And I can't really give it to someone else. I can't say, do exactly what I'm doing. But I can encourage them to find their own path, find the things that are deeply meaningful to them, and then be willing to choose those things and structure their life. And they don't have to please me. I don't have to approve, as long as they make sense out of what they're doing. So I tend less to get cozy with my own point of view. A lot of times now I'm just telling them, I try this, try whatever you think and see if it's going to work for you, because we're all different, and a little bit different than the way it used to be.
Well, anyway. Thanks for sharing, Georgie. We've got another caller, so thanks so much for sharing.
All right, God bless.
We'll see you next time.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. And area code 856, you're on the air.
Hello, hi. My name is Jennifer, and I listen to your show all the time.
Oh, hi, Jennifer.
It has really helped. Hi, how are you?
Good.
And I just wanted to thank you so much for having this material out there to educate individuals who have experienced this diabolical, evil human that walks around and has a facade that is just so, you know, appealing, but yet, you know, when you dig, you know, in this, under the surface, they're just somebody else. But I, my question to you is, I, you know, had experienced a narcissist, no doubt about it. He has all of the qualities of one, and coupled with that, he's also a gambler. And of course, what goes along with, you know, gambling and narcissism is that, you know, when you're winning, you know, you got the grandiose, charming, you know, bigger than life attitude. But then when you're losing, you know, the whole world is, you know, sucked up and everybody's devoured around them. And, you know, the borrowing money and not getting it back. And but my question to you is, and this is something that really was hallmark in my relationship and it was a trigger in me, is that the suggestion of, you know, them telling me that I should kill myself. Would you say that's a form of projection, in that they can't really deal with their addiction, so they're projecting suicidal thoughts onto another person because they can't deal with the addiction and the losing part of it?
Well, it could be, you know, first of all, the addiction is very common amongst narcissistic people, whether it's sex addiction or gambling or some other kind of drug or alcohol use. But projection is huge. It's really, really huge. And so with that person, what you're describing is that somebody who is inflated, whose ego is inflated with winning and deflated with losing to extreme levels. And somebody who's narcissistic is a master at projection anyway. So when he's in that deflated place from losing, then he probably feels that life isn't worth living in that moment. And his solution is that you kill yourself because his life isn't worth living, you know, because that's projection. That's projection. But, you know, I suppose the real question is, how do you feel about somebody talking to you like that?
It feels terrible because I couldn't fathom in my wildest thoughts to suggest to anybody to go and, you know, eliminate their life. Like, you know, who says that to another person? You know, it's, to me, it's like, it's almost like you're sending like a curse out to that person and you're putting it out in the universe that you would rather see that person dead. And that's some serious negative energy. And, you know, and it really makes me feel bad. And it is, I'm starting to reconsider everything at this point. It's been going on 3 years, and I have fought very hard to keep myself afloat. And I had some, you know, I've been in some dark places with this. That's why I want to just thank you so much for, you know, having, you know, these shows available, because I listen to your segments, and sometimes I've listened to them over and over again. I've went to bed sometimes listening to them to override, you know, the negative that was, you know, just overwhelming me. So, yeah, it is a terrible thing for someone to treat another person like this. But in any event, I mean, this is, it's real, it exists, and it's just, I'm just trying to get all the tools that I need so I can really walk away from this for once and for all.
Well, good. Good. I'm so glad to hear you say that, and thank you so much for calling.
Yes, thank you so much, and keep up the good work, and I thank you again so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Wow. So I just want to thank everybody for joining me today. We just have less than a minute left, so I've got to bear the farewell until next time. So in a couple weeks from now, I believe my next topic is going to be on true love, because I've gotten a lot of people asking me about that. And it's not going to necessarily be what you think it is, so stay tuned. Probably 2 weeks from now, I'm going to be broadcasting every 2 weeks for a while. So thank you for listening. Have a good day.